Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
Open your Bibles to Psalm 114. The way this psalm begins, when Israel went out of Egypt. That would grab the attention of the Jews, the way that psalm began. That story of how Israel came out of Egypt is one of the key events of the Old Testament. And was certainly in the heart of all of the Jews. We call this the Exodus. There's the book of Exodus, one of the books of the Bible that describes this event. You hear the word Exodus, you hear the word exit. That's what they did. They took the exit out of Egypt, and that's why that word sounds that way, Exodus. It means the going out. And you know the story, how God called Moses. Why, he was a runaway from Egypt. He was a shepherd on the back side of the wilderness where he had hidden for 40 years. For 40 years. And perhaps he thought he'd put that past behind him and he could deal with that and go on and just be this humble shepherd and be safe out there on the back side of the wilderness. And then God appeared to him in the form of a burning bush and said, Moses, you go tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And Pharaoh, why Egypt was the most powerful people, the Egyptians, the most powerful people in this world. And of all the Egyptians, Pharaoh, the most powerful person. And then here's this runaway shepherd from the backside of the wilderness is going to tell Pharaoh what to do. And Moses was afraid to go. But with God's persuasion, Moses went and stood before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh didn't make this easy. Pharaoh said to Moses, who is Jehovah, that I should hearken unto him and let his people go? I will not let them go. Pharaoh's strength was in his hard heart. You talk about a man that was determined to have his own way. Why, as far as he saw it, I'm Pharaoh. I don't have to listen to anyone, and I sure don't have to listen to some shepherd's God. And so he hardened his heart. And God said, for this cause have I raised thee up, that I might show forth my power in all the earth. And then you have that great test of wills between this man that had a strength of a hard heart and between God, and the 12 plagues come. And to Pharaoh's credit, if you can say to credit, but to demonstrate Pharaoh's strength, that man stood there and withstood 11 of those plagues, and still he would not let them go. But when that 12th plague came, and that firstborn died, that hard heart of Pharaoh was broken, and he let them go. And God did show his power. It was the firstborn of all of Egypt that were to die that night, unless you were of the Hebrews. And unless, being of the Hebrews, you slew the lamb and took the blood and put it on the post of your door, and then took the lamb and roasted it whole and stayed in the house and ate all of the lamb that you could, and what was left, you were to burn to ashes onto the fire so that there would be nothing left of it until the morning. And then with that roast lamb, you would eat unleavened bread and bitter herbs. And when that sun came up the next morning, while the Israelites were free, and they went up out of Egypt, and it was a glorious day of victory for them. It'd be like their 4th of July to remember that. We're having our 4th of July coming up this week. And so this would be like that, the birth of their nation. And God did not want them to forget. And so he told them, every year at this time, you will keep the Passover feast. And you'll keep it with that unleavened bread and that lamb and those herbs, just like we did. And you'll remember how God delivered Israel out of Egypt. And from ancient times, when the Israelites would gather together in their houses to keep this feast, during that night, they would sing these songs, this collection of songs from Psalm 113 to Psalm 118, the Hallel. And this is the second of the psalms that they would sing that night in their house. This psalm. When Israel went up out of Egypt. And certainly a fitting psalm for the keeping of the Passover. It says in the next verse, Jacob went up from a people of a strange land, the house of Jacob. Now Jacob is Israel. Jacob is that grandson of Abraham to whom the promise came. And he had 12 sons. And those sons, it was their families that grew into the 12 tribes of Israel. And when the house of Jacob came from Canaan's land into Egypt, there was about 70 souls. And they were a family. And now they're numbering into the millions at the time that they go out, but still they understand that they have a common heritage. They have the common fathers. And they're just a great big family and could still identify themselves as the house of Jacob. And they're going up away from a people of a strange tongue. The Egyptians spoke a different language than the Hebrews did. You remember the story of Joseph, how that he was carried as a slave down into Egypt, and when his brothers came to him, well, Joseph would speak to them through an interpreter. Now, Joseph could understand what his brothers were saying, but he didn't think his brothers would know that, and he was disguising himself from them. They didn't know he was Joseph, and so they spoke through an interpreter because there was a language difference between the Hebrews and the Egyptians. That language barrier is a big barrier. And it's part of the providence of God that He took the house of Jacob out of the land of Canaan and brought them into Egypt and to nurture them and grow them into a nation there. The Canaanites were an ungodly, wicked people. And the children of Israel, those sons of Joseph, were already beginning to be influenced and mingling with those Canaanites. And they would lose their identity as a chosen people of God if they let their culture blend with those of the Canaanites. And so you come into Egypt. There's a different culture. The Egyptians despise shepherds. There would be a language barrier. There would be other things that were there that would keep these people separate and as a unit and understanding that they are a family, a chosen family of God here that would incubate them and protect them from the cultural influences round about being in Egypt that way with a different language. And so we can see the providence of God informing them, and that worked because they came out of Egypt as a separate people. It says, Judah was his sanctuary. Well, that's one of the tribes, Judah. Judah had grown. You can find it in the book of Numbers and read about that. Judah, the descendants of Judah had become the most powerful tribe, the most powerful family in the household of Jacob. When they would go out of Egypt, they went out like an army. And it would be the tribe of Judah that would go out first and lead the way. They would be the first ones to move out across in their daily journeyings. And so Judah had been selected already by God as a special place in the history of this people. And we saw that when Jacob gave his blessings to his 12 sons and said that out of Judah would come the scepter and it would not depart from his feet until Shiloh come. And that promise that through thy seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed. It went from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob and to Judah. And by being a sanctuary, that means a word holy, something set apart. And of all the nations and families of the earth, it was the children of Israel that were set apart. And of all of the Israelites and the tribes of Israel, it was the tribe of Judah that was set apart in God's plan. Through Judah would come David and the kings, and then later would come the Christ. And so there was Judah, and Israel my dominion. God would be their king, no longer ruled by Pharaoh, but God would be their king along the way. And then it says, the sea saw it and fled, and Jordan was driven back. The mountains skipped like rams and the little hills like lambs. This is a literary device that the poet is using when he takes these inanimate things and speaks of them as though they themselves are personalities, as though they are people. The Red Sea didn't have eyes that could see, but he said the sea saw it and fled. We know what that's talking about. That's one of those great stories of faith that you read about in the Bible. When the children of Israel came out of Egypt, and they came up to the shores of the Red Sea, and Pharaoh had changed his mind and was bringing his armies to bear down upon them and bring them back into captivity, and the people began to panic and accuse Moses. You brought us out here so we could die? And Moses, that great man of faith, stood before that troubled multitude with the army on one side and the sea on the other and said, "Stand still and see the salvation of Jehovah." And then when he lifted up that rod, that sea divided forth, and there was a path of dry land across the midst of the sea through which the children of Israel went. What a great and glorious event that was. The sea saw it and fled. That was the way the wilderness wanderings begin. It ended much the same way. Moses was dead, and Joshua was leading the children of Israel. And God told Joshua, "As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee." And now Jordan is at the flood stage, and it's time to cross Jordan. And so at God's instructions, Joshua called for the priest to bear the Ark of the Covenant. And they walked down to those flooded waters, and as their feet came to the flooded waters of Jordan, Jordan was driven back. And again, there's a dry path now across the river. And those priests stood there in the midst of that dry riverbed holding that ark with the waters held back. And the children of Israel again walked across on dry land. And they took up 12 stones and built a memorial on the other side that stood for many years in Israel to commemorate that crossing of the Jordan River. And then it says that the mountains skipped like rams and the little hills like lambs. You ever been out around livestock? You go up to the gate and open the fence and there's the livestock out in the field and they're all looking at you. And you got to go through them and you start approaching the livestock and you know what they do? Well, they jump right out of the way. You've seen that. The little calves will run and the cows will move and if you had the sheep or the goat, they get out of your way and they'll make a path for you. I don't know anywhere where it says that the mountains or the hills literally moved out of their way. Perhaps they did. That's not recorded in the narrative of their journeys. But just imagine what it would be to be going out from Egypt and stepping into that desert and looking, and there are the mountains ahead of you. How are we going to get through the mountains? Well, there was a path through the sea. There'll be a path through those hills. Sometime when I'm going down I-40 on the way to Tennessee, I look at those mountains and you're coming up to those mountains and you see them in the distance. And sometimes it looks like the road's just going to go right into the mountains, doesn't it? If watch this sometime and do this in your mind. Look at the tops of those hills as you round those curves and go down those roads. And you can almost imagine seeing those mountains just kind of parting and moving out of the way. And there is a path through those mountains. And you can drive through there. Perhaps that's what that's talking about, as they come to these mountains and these barriers in the way that look so formidable at a distance. And they march in toward them and it's as though they're just moved right out of the way. There is a way through those challenges. There is a way to overcome those obstacles. I don't know if they literally moved or not. But I know my Lord said faith can move mountains. That if you had the faith is of the grain of a mustard seed. And say to this mountain, "Be thou cast into the sea, so shall it be done." And as we walk through life and face the obstacles of life, with God's help, we can walk right toward those mountains and it's as though they get moved right out of the way. There is a way through. And so, he almost chides them in the song, laughing at them, poking at them. It says, "What aileth thee, O sea, that thou fleddest? Thou Jordan, why wast thou driven back? Ye mountains that skip like rams, and ye little hills like lambs." And then if that's some light-hearted ridicule, this turns very serious. "Tremble, thou earth, that the presence of the Lord, that the presence of the God of Jacob." You know, that did happen. They come to Mount Sinai, And they stood before that mountain, and Moses told them, you get ready, you prepare, wash your garments, and don't touch the mountain. And then there was thunders and lightnings, sound of a trumpet that grew loud, and it says that the whole mount quaked as God made His presence known to Israel. And so the mountain shook that day when the Lord spake to them and began to give them their law. Then it says in verse 8, this is the God that, it says, which turned the water into a standing pool of water and the flint into a fount of waters. God didn't just call them out of Egypt and get them out in the desert in the wilderness. All along the way, He provided for them and He cared for them. And He brought them all the way then across the Jordan and into their promised land just like He said He would do it. And they made it all the way. What a glorious song for Israel to sing as they kept that Passover feast and remembered that great event. Is there anything in there for us? Oh, yes, there is. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11 says, these things happen to them as an example for us. That's particularly calling about the fact that we've got to take heed lest we fall. And about the fact that they'd sinned along the way. But there's other things here too. Very often the analogy is between the wilderness wanderings and our Christian life. You can compare the bondage of Egypt to the bondage of sin. The baptism and the waters and the sea, as it talks about in the book of 1 Corinthians, well, there's the baptism into Christ. The wilderness wanderings with the challenges and obstacles along the way is walking through that desert and those mountains departing before us as we make our journey. That rock that followed them, that the water that came from the rock, the provisions along the way, it tells us in 1 Corinthians 10, that rock was Christ. And there's the fount of living waters from which we can drink for that spiritual renewal and strength as we make this journey. And we come to the Jordan River, and there's the death. And that event that separates us between this life and the promised land that lays on the other side. And so often crossing that Jordan is depicted as going through that death so we can come out on the other side to our eternal reward. There's the analogies there. And the lesson to learn is, it's the same God. We've got the promise. He's shown us what He can do. And as He provided for them every step of the way, God's with us. He provides for us. This journey we're making to the promised land, we can do this. We can make it. God's promised that. Romans chapter 8, that God has already given His own Son to die for us. And then the question, will He not freely give us everything? If He's already done that much for us, do you think that there's something we're going to need along the way to get with our Heavenly Father that He would withhold from us? He's already demonstrated He'll give us all we need. We just need to keep walking in faith until we arrive at that eternal home. There's an event told in Numbers chapter 10 in verse 29. And on his journeys through the wilderness, Moses comes across his father-in-law. He tells his father-in-law this. He says, we are journeying unto the place of the which the Lord said, I will give it thee. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good. For the Lord has spoken good concerning Israel. Well, that's our invitation. We're journeying on to the promised land. We're on our way to be with our Heavenly Father in eternity. We are bound for the promised land. Will you come and go with me? I'm bound for the promised land. There's no compromise on my part. I'm going, but you are welcome to come go with us. For the Lord has spoken good concerning Israel.